You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No. Because I'm going to get him.
Yeah, welcome, ladies. Yeah, I better pull this. Oh, man.
There you go.
See? Look, I'm just wrecking the place up here. Hey, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We broadcast live every weeknight, Monday through Friday. That's every weeknight, Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Global Star Radio Network. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. We're simulcast on Blog Talk Radio, BTR, of course. And you can watch us live and by archive. Of course, you can do that right from our website, HagmanandHagman.com. And subscribe to our YouTube channel, folks. Please do that. And
we're almost
at
30,000 subscribers.
Yeah, really, we should be demographic. By the demographics, I think we should be pretty close to 100,000.
Yes.
And I do know that the numbers, it's interesting that we can watch the numbers change in real time in blocks of numbers. So we know that there's some funny business taking place with numbers on the internet. But folks, don't forget, we've got two different websites. We've got HagmanandHagman.com. That's for show information and to watch the program and for archived and live videos. And, of course, HagmanReport.com, that's for show prep, show material, other news of import, of course, that's HagmanReport.com. Bookmark both. I'm Doug Hagman at the helm, a fellow investigator, researcher, and, of course, my son, Joe Hagman. We are the Hagman and Hagman Report, something I like to call America's premier father-son investigative reporting team. Tonight, we got a lot of information to get into. We had some things planned for tonight, and then, of course, there was some news that came out. I don't know whether you saw this or not, ladies and gentlemen, and you might think this is absolutely, basically, totally irrelevant to anything, but I don't think so.
You mean what's all over the front page of Drudge?
Is it all over the? Oh yes, it is.
Oh my goodness!
Oh my god! Yes, yes.
Prince
yes.
dead.
Well, you know what? We are going to get into this because there is some important information from this.
Didn't he change his name to
yes,
a symbol?
Yes, and we're going to be getting into this heavily. And of course, I want to remind everyone that portions of the nice broadcast brought to you by WholeTonesLive.com. That's WholeTonesLive.com. Folks, have you been to WholeTonesLive.com yet? If you haven't, go to the website. That's WholeTonesLive.com. Right now, pictured prominently on our YouTube screen. That's WHOLE. TONES, WholeTonesLive.com. You know, if life really makes you feel like it's running you instead of you running your life, then you need WholeTonesLive.com. It's a great product. You can download some free samples there. It's based off the music of King David. And more on that later. But we do have to get into some important information about Prince. Now, this is, and here's
what
why.
What nation was he the prince of?
Yeah, the prince of the occult airwaves. But here's why this is important, folks. And you may think that this is merely just fluff and has nothing to do with anything. And you know, normally I would say you're correct. 5 years ago, I would have said, you know what? You're absolutely 100% correct. It's just a death of really a celebrity, a singer. It has nothing to do with anything. But let me explain a few things here. In why it's important. Because it does touch at the periphery of the satanic elite, the occult. There are things such as ritualistic celebrity deaths, and they involve situations, incidents, both of past and future, with respect to sacrifices to the gods, small g, and the practice of the occult and Satanism in Hollywood and beyond. And this is of particular interest, Prince, because it was rumored that he was dead about 36 hours ago. Did you know that? Yeah. In fact, reports of his death were...
Celebrity Watch did not alert me.
So some research on the social networking sites found that there was a rumor of his death about 36 hours ago.
Well, he tweeted or Instagrammed 6 days ago, "I am transformed."
Yeah, and the Twitter picture... And if you haven't seen it, his last Twitter picture. Well, there was actually two. One, and you've got to look close, and you can't rely totally on just merely
I'm going to send this to you, Eric.
You cannot really merely rely on what the media is telling you. You've got to really dig deep and search this for yourself.
The picture in question here, Prince's icon just changed. The tri-shades vanished to reveal the eyes were closed and the third eye was open.
Right. Obviously, and we'll put it up. But basically, just picture a person with round sunglasses on, and then instead of having two lenses over each eye, there would be a third lens directly in the center of that person's forehead, in this case, Prince. So you've got eyeglasses, spectacles, whatever you want to call them, shades, and then, of course, a third lens covering what would be the third eye. And this is critical to understand, because it doesn't matter what you and I believe, folks. It matters what the purveyors, those who embrace the occult, believe. And why does this matter with respect to current events? With everything else that's going on out there, who cares? Well, again, we're looking at an event that is sending a message. There's symbolism here, and the timing when you start getting into this and peeling away the layers of this really smelly onion of the occult, then you'll understand that there are messages being conveyed here.
And I just got a message from John Roberts, and he's going to be joining us at the top of next hour. He said that he can touch on this Prince issue, right, as he is our Hollywood insider.
All right. Well, just sticking to the facts, Prince, the man known as Prince, he was born Prince Rogers Nelson, and he was born into a musical family in Minneapolis. Let me give you some background here, and then cover everything here. Tonight, by the way, no guests, except we'll have John checking in with us, touching base about this and about a North Carolina law, and then news, of course, and what have you. But this is important, and I don't believe that any mainstream media is going to touch on this, or any of the alternative media is going to delve as deep as we have, and we will continue. So anyway, Prince, the guy known as Prince, the singer, he was born as Prince Rogers Nelson into a family of musicians in Minneapolis. That's his birthplace, Minneapolis, Minnesota. He suffered from epilepsy as a child, which subsided over time. He was really a genuine prodigy, according to those around him. He was able to play a dazzling array of instruments just at will, no lessons. I think he played 27 in total. He obviously projected this very distinct form of feminist. He had feminist qualities despite being a male, although boasted of bedding women many times. Don't they all, according to Eric the Tech? Absolutely. He wrote lusty songs, lyrics, and what have you to really with this blatant carnality while espousing this eccentric but deadly apocalyptic pseudo-Christian spirituality. Those are my words based on my investigation and research into this man. He certainly was full of contradiction. Now, he made his debut during disco. How many remember that? Oh yeah, my favorite time.
It was my heyday.
Yeah, you weren't even there. But at the height of the disco era, his album. How many young people know what an album is? Was For You. In that particular album, he played all 27 instruments on that album, vinyl. A self-titled album followed. He had a number of hits on the R&B chart. But as disco kind of went by the wayside, beginning in 1980, Prince revamped his sound for the Dirty Mind LP. All right. Now, it was at that time described and today even as new wave funk, whatever that means, with lyrics celebrating incest, oral sex.
Really?
Oh yeah. And even some less controversial topics. He polished the formula of his lyrics.
Geopolitics in any regard would be less controversial.
Exactly. Well, 1981 controversy was a one of his albums in 1981, but he continued his obsession with sexuality and spirituality. Now think about that. All right. The lyrics of Controversy's title track were notable for combining the Lord's Prayer with the lyrics, "People call me rude, I wish we were all nude." Kind of a really twisted appearance. Now, on his next release, there was a double LP or double album, 1999, Prince doubled down in terms of his controversial approach to things. The music was less sparse, more expansive, according to reviewers at the time. Guitars, adding new chords and depth to his music. The rock ballad Little Red Corvette. Folks of my generation, or actually younger than me, how many remember that, of course, Little Red Corvette? That was a major hit. The album cracked the top 10. That, of course, I'm talking about the 1999 album. Now, think of the significance of this as we're talking about this. And again, folks, joining us late, we're talking about Prince, the occult significance of the announcement of his death today, what it means, what it pretends to Satanists and Satanism. You'll see how this all fits, that we haven't lost our minds, that we haven't turned into TMZ or some other kind of... that gave Eric a laugh, Eric the Tech a laugh. I like it. But see, this is important. You might not think so. And again, it doesn't matter what you believe. It doesn't matter what I believe. It doesn't matter what the people on the street believe. It matters what these Satanists believe and what they implement, because that does tell us the direction in which we are headed. Now, a little Red Corvette on the album that cracked the top 10, 1999, that earned Prince a movie deal. And Purple Rain. How many people remember Purple Rain? That was created as a fictionalized autobiographical film. It presented Prince as a heroic taboo smasher. Yeah, go figure. Of course, talking about incest and such, and combining decidedly apocalyptic Christian spirituality with just insane and unbelievable at the time lyrics that celebrated incest, oral sex, and such. I mean, so anyway, Purple Rain again was this fictionalized autobiographical film where it did present Prince as a heroic taboo smasher. The soundtrack was really really huge. It sold well over 10 million copies. It was his first LP to feature extensive musical contributions from his backup band, The Revolution. Think about that. The Revolution, backup band. In 1985, Prince rushed out the album Around the World in a Day. That was before Purple Rain had gone off the charts, kind of like, you know, just following one or issuing one LP before the other one runs its course. And that was an excursion into the breezy 60s pop. Kind of a retrogression, if you will, that left a lot of his fans wondering, what the heck, what's this guy doing? Well, the bewilderment would continue with the movie Under the Cherry Moon. Now, folks, those most discerning among you, just keep in mind these names. They do have importance in the satanic realm. Now, that bombed at the box office and won Worst Picture at the Golden Raspberry Awards. Prince recovered from that in 1987 with a double LP, Sign O' the Times. That's right, Sign O' the Times. And again, you'll have to think outside of the boundaries and think outside of the box to understand here what we're talking about. This was a multi-platinum return to a surefire rock and funk formula that, according to some reviewers... Now, that said, had Prince largely returning to the one-man band routine. Don't forget, a child prodigy able to play instruments at will, no sheet music, 27 instruments. Yeah, you gotta wonder, okay, a little bit. Anyway, he had various occasional contributions from other artists during this time as well. Now, in 1988, he pushed out an album called Love Sexy. And people might remember that cover as featuring a nude prince. And boy, did he look effeminate. Almost transsexual? He was surrounded by giant orchids in that picture. Again, I urge everyone to understand the symbolism behind what we're talking about here. 2 years later, 2 years after the multi-platinum sign of the times, you know, Prince was in need of a career boost. And guess what? He cut a soundtrack for a movie. You want to guess what the movie was? Batman. Well, little of it was actually heard in the film. But the album was enough of a hit, even if most critics were unimpressed. But again, Prince followed Batman with another film flop, and that was Graffiti Bridge. After that, he worked in a more generically, shall we say, funky aspect or venue. And he spent a good chunk of the 1990s fighting his record label, his record company that signed him on, which was trying to, well, let's just say there was a commercial dispute there. Well, how did he fight back? What did he do in this big giant publicity stunt? He changed his name, but not to another name, a symbol. He changed his name to a symbol until the contract was resolved. And he did ultimately escape his contract. He formed his own record label, sold records off his website. But think about this now. Everything I said, note the symbol to which he used in place of his name. That is the story in a nutshell of Prince Rogers Nelson, the artist formerly known as Prince. And on our YouTube video,
Turn around.
Can check out the look at that. On the backdrop we have Prince in studio. Right.
Well, this is what was reported by Fox News. 7-time Grammy winner Prince, who is known for mega hits like When Doves Cry and Purple Rain, has died at the age of 57. Goes on to say Prince was found dead in the elevator of his
ranch,
Paisley Park estate in Chanahessen, Minnesota, on Thursday. Deputies and medical personnel found the music icon unresponsive when they arrived at his home and performed CPR that was unsuccessful. 10:07 a.m., he was pronounced dead. The singer's publicist confirmed his death to Fox News.
All right.
And it goes on from there. It is with profound sadness that I'm confirming that the legendary, iconic performer, Prince Roger Nelson, has died at his residence this morning at the age of 57, his representative wrote in a statement. According to a press release, the Carver County Sheriff's Office, with the assistance of the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office and the Midwest Medical Examiner's Office, are continuing to investigate the circumstances surrounding his death.
And as you pointed out, too, let's just go over the facts of the case first. Carver County Sheriff Jim Olson reported that today, 4/21/16. Interesting numerical significance here, 4/21. Plus, you have to understand, of course, we're approaching Beltane, the high satanic holiday, and, of course, understand, too, the significance of April 19th, 20, 21, and so on. Here again, according to the Carver County Sheriff Jim Olson, he reported that on Thursday, April 21st, 2016, at 9:43 a.m., sheriff's deputies responded to a medical call at, as you said, Paisley Park Studios in Chanhassen. Deputies got there. They found an unresponsive adult male in the elevator. And as you pointed out, they did do CPR, or attempted CPR. He was pronounced dead at 10:07. I do want to say that these numbers are of extreme importance. Now, he's 57 years old. He was hospitalized 6 days before his death with what was reported to be flu-like symptoms. His representative said at the time that he had been battling a bout of the flu for weeks. He had to cancel a couple of shows. In just 5 days before his death, he made what would be his last appearance in a concert, showing up at a local dance party near his home. Now, here's what he said at that concert. And again, I would urge everyone to really understand that there are messages being given. He said, "Wait a few days before you waste any prayers." That was in response to the people there saying that they were going to pray for his health, wellness. Wait a few days before you waste any prayers. So did he know something that others did not? It certainly sounded like it. Not TMZ did report, they were the first ones to report on his death, and reported on his last public appearance, noting that Prince showed up at a $10 entry dance party because, listen to this, because we're told Prince wanted people to have living proof he was still living. What in the world is going on? So, rumors of his death were greatly exaggerated. Well, not really. Rumors of his death were merely premature. Then he shows up at a dance party and says, "Hey, wait a few days before you waste any prayers." And then, oddly, he put up a Twitter icon with a third eye, and then changed it to a third eye open. Basically, what TMZ says is this. On the day of Prince's death, Joe, as you had stated, a rumor quickly spread that the singer's icon, an illustrated portrait of the artist with both eyes closed but a third eye on his forehead wide open, was changed right after his passing, sparking many to question what the Prince icon really means. Now, many people will say, "Oh no, wait! That rumor was quickly debunked. Prince's Twitter icon was actually added to the social networking site late in March, and that was according to a blog post by Welcome to the Dawn." Now, the article that we were referring to states that many mystical teachings and religions, the opening of the third eye, is an important step in a spiritual awakening. And many will recall this. For example, in many mystical teachings and religions, do I need to make this any clearer? In many mystical teachings and religions, please understand what I'm saying here, the third eye chakra is said to help one become more introspective and aware of the deeper meaning of life. Some will equate that to the pineal gland. Now, don't everyone, get all their panties in a bunch here. Just please bear with me. I am referencing mystical teachings and religions. But the fact of the matter is, what is the message, or the message that is being conveyed by Prince to his followers? Are we seeing something a little bit different here? Now, he did reportedly change his religion, his spirituality, and adopted the Jehovah's Witness platform, or the belief of Jehovah's Witnesses. However, that's interesting because he was also said by many around him that he was more Eastern, he was more adherent to the Eastern mysticism and religion than those that according to the Jehovah Witness doctrine. But it's interesting because a number of years ago, and you can find this well documented, Prince admitted that he had two other people living inside of him, very evil spirits, and that he changed his name to formerly known as Prince because he didn't know what the spirits wanted to call him. Think about that for a second. There was an article in the USA Today. Can I help you? Oh, thanks. Appreciate that. Sorry about that. There's an article in the USA Today can you hear the paper shuffling? On Tuesday, November 27th, 2001, on page 5D, it talks about Prince, the Rainbow Children. How fitting that Prince's resurrection as a pop visionary comes by way of a religious awakening, having exhausted sexual taboos. The recently converted Jehovah Witness bravely plunges into the forbidden zone of faith, taking provocative discourse to a higher plane without abandoning his lust for greasy funk and bump and grind beats. Boy, that's a... Give some picture, doesn't it? Preaching peace and harmony, Prince slams hypocrisy, racism, sexism, and spiritual bankruptcy in his strongest sacred and social statement since 1987's masterful Sign O' the Times. Periodic slides into this dogmatic aspect are forgotten in the heady rush of strikingly original music, a soulful symphony of rock, funk, gospel, jazz, hybrids. And of course it goes on. I'm not going to read the whole thing. This is by Edna Gunderson. And again, this did appear in a review, USA Today, on page 5D from Tuesday, November 7th, 2001. So why would I even read that, or why would we even care about that? Well, let me, again, here's what we're looking at. We're looking at this death of a celebrity, of a star, of a singer, of dubious identity, who happens to be dead at age 57, who allegedly died on April 21st, 2016. The numbers, again, are all important. The dates are important. We know that Prince himself, Rogers Nelson, Prince Rogers Nelson, that's his name, not a title, changed his name to a symbol. And note the symbol that's based on a, well, you can do your own research into the symbol. We don't have time tonight to get into it, but if you note the symbol, it is certainly that, it certainly represents a satanic, at least at its periphery, implied, if not overt, and inspired, according to the man himself, by the fact that he changed his name to a symbol because he really didn't know what the two other people living inside of him, the evil spirits, what they wanted him to call himself. And he's dead today. All right. Now, go back in time, look at the deaths of, for example, Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston. You might even want to throw in Joan Rivers in there, but for different reasons.
And there's many others.
And many others, that's right. But to really understand why this is important, you've got to understand the history of rock and roll. You've got to understand the history of the celebrities who have sold their souls for fame. And don't forget, child prodigy, or a prodigy, being able to play music without, play 27 instruments. Just talented, obviously. But where did that talent come from? In his ominous statements before at his most recent appearance, where he said prophetically, wait a few days before you waste any prayers on me. Now, he did have a medical emergency, admittedly, on April 15th, that forced his private jet to make an emergency landing in Illinois, but he appeared at a concert the next day to assure his fans were that he was okay. And again, he told his fans that he's battling the flu. And I went through his history. Now, he's married twice. I should point this out, too. He's married to a first time to his backup dancer, and the second time to another woman. They split. The first marriage ended in 2000, the second in 2006. And we know, and also too, we know how these stars, these celebrities, these performers convey symbolic, ritualistic, and engage in ritualistic practices at events such as the Super Bowl and the Grammys and whatever venue that provides their whatever venue they can. So this is rife with Luciferianism, the occult. When you look at this from a larger perspective. Now, I will say this based on, and please listen carefully to what I'm saying here. I'm going to timestamp this. This is 1742 Eastern Time, or 742, 1942, 742 Eastern Time on Thursday, April 21st, 2016. I guarantee you, I shouldn't say guarantee you, based on my research, investigation, you're going to see at least one and perhaps two more individuals of fame pass here in the next very short period of time. Around Beltane, around the May 1st holiday or May 1st satanic holiday. Now, because these are celebrated usually in threes, three having extreme occult significance. There was a death of a performer, of a female actor, of course, Doris Roberts. And I'd really like to think certainly wouldn't want to count that. But these do happen in threes, and people say, oh, that's just an old saying, it's an old adage that has no basis in any fact, but there is significance and power to the satanic number three. And even Pastor Langford and others, and I'm not putting words in his mouth, but he recognizes that there are numbers of the Bible that are used in the Bible, and there's biblical numerology, and then there's occult numerology, obviously. And that's pretty much proven. So these numbers do mean things, as do the dates, as do the circumstances, and as do, for example, the timing of the announcements, the timing of the funeral. Remember, folks, wasn't Michael Jackson, didn't he, I mean, it was like 70 days before Michael Jackson was actually buried from the time of his death, 70. So I would urge everyone to do the research, do the math, look at the dates. And I am not going to, we are not going to tell you what to think from this, except to say, look at this as a message. There's some symbology here. And even though it doesn't matter, for example, if it was a natural, well, I shouldn't say natural, but let's say, for example, there's an autopsy was done, and let's say he's reported to have a heart attack or something. I mean, things like this do happen. Obviously, people die every day. It happens all the time. It's not to say that there's anything nefarious about the death. I find it certainly interesting that there were some issues. His death was reported a couple of days before, and he proved, just the other day, he showed up at a concert to prove that he was yet alive. And then again, he made some cryptic remarks at a concert, $10 entry fee concert, where he said, "Don't waste your prayers on me yet." What am I getting at? Well, look at the symbology behind this, and also consider that this could very well have additional meaning to it. Now, we will be getting more into this with additional information at a later time. But consider this a moment in time, a historic or a time bookmark right now. Consider this a bookmark in time, where you're looking at this, and we're telling you it's important. Maybe not to you, but to the occultists, the Satanists, the Luciferians. That's what we're saying. It's important to them. It may not have any importance to you, but consider this a bookmark in time. But now you know the backdrop. You know the fact that this guy, heavily involved in the symbolic, the gender bending from way back when, and also the symbology, the third eye. Now he's dead on the 21st of April. And this does, I think we will see meaning from this, and I don't think this will be the last based on historic patterns. And of course there's always that, the statistics that can be exploited to make any pattern fit into a presupposed theory. That's not what we're talking about here. That's not what I'm talking about here. Just want to reassure you of that. But notice there's occult significance in this. I don't want to spend any more time on that, but I thought I'd deliver this message to those who care to hear it, to those who to understand what I'm saying, and from there we can move on. So, Joe, thoughts?
Well, I'd like to hear what John Robertson has to say on the issue. What you covered was in-depth and important, and I think we're still yet to see the whole picture here of what's really going on. We have a lot of changes in our country, in whether this was a regular death or an occult, ritualistic, symbolic death is unknown at the time, but we've had our share of those here in the recent past, from Whitney Houston, from her daughter, to many others.
David Bowie, and I would also say the David Bowie death was extremely significant, and that was covered really. There were a lot of strange things associated with that, and of course with the life of David Bowie. And this goes back to things that we talk about, like Laurel Canyon, which was a group of musical misfits, but their parents, their fathers, they were all involved in the government military operations and mind control. Isn't that interesting? And this is an outgrowth of that. So this touches on all aspects, in my view, of the social engineering, the predictive programming, all of this together, Joe. You see, that's why Laurel Canyon is so important. That's why Woodstock was so important, to have that occur at that time, at that place, because it set the stage for what we're seeing today and for over the last four decades. And of course, Woodstock was an intelligence operation, a Tavistockian operation. That drugs were complementary from the criminal cabal within the government itself. So, and it was an experiment. It was a social experiment. And it was a social engineering practice to get us to where we are today. And those people, and please, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not trying to force relevance where there is none. What I am trying to do is what we're trying to do is at least provide a picture into current events deeper than anyone else will go, or at least anyone in the corporate media and few in the new media will go to provide a better understanding of what could be being readied with respect to sacrifices. And what we're witnessing is a complete, in my view, a complete sacrificial, a very perverse, satanic, Luciferian-rooted sacrificial rite. And there will be more. And we, one of the things that we didn't have time to do, I mean, this is announced but earlier today, and of course it takes time to do the research, but we should also look at the planetary alignments and the timing and the you know, the other numerical aspects, all of this that fits in order to get a bigger picture, which we are doing as we speak. So it takes some time, but there you have at least this serving as a bookmark. So that's yeah. I thought that was pretty interesting there.
Definitely very interesting. Wanted to hit on this. There's a few stories that I want to touch on actually before we hit the top of the hour.
Sure.
One, State Department office removed Benghazi files after congressional subpoena.
Yes.
State Department officials removed from the files or files from the secretary's office related to the Benghazi attack in Libya and transferred them to another department after receiving the congressional subpoena last spring, delaying the release of the records to Congress for over a year. Attorneys at the State Department said the electronic folders, which contain hundreds of documents related to the Benghazi attacks in Libya, were rediscovered at the end of last year. They said the files had been overlooked by the State Department officials, and because the executive secretary's office transferred them to another department and flagged them for archiving last April after receiving the subpoena from the House Select Committee on Benghazi. The new source of the documents include electronic folders used by senior officials under Secretary of State Clinton. They were originally kept in the Executive Secretary's office, which handles communications and coordination between the Office of Secretary and other departments. Senator Chuck Grassley, chairman for the Senate Judiciary Committee, blasted the State Department's Freedom of Information Act process as broken in January, citing systematic failures at the agency. This due because all the records from the Benghazi attack were not turned over to the Congressional Committee when they asked for them, and this is the alleged story of what happened to them. Apparently, a subpoena was issued for all records relating to the State Department and the Benghazi.
How well did that work out for the Rose Law Firm records?
After okay. the subpoena was issued, the government archived many of the Benghazi records, meaning they received the subpoena saying, we need all information pertaining to, we'll say, Bible. That'd be like me going on my computer, finding a folder that says Bible.
Right.
Archiving it, sending it away to another computer. Not disclosing it. Not subjecting it to the Freedom of Information Act. Not subjecting it to the subpoena request.
But wait.
But hiding
but
it.
But isn't the Freedom of Information Act, isn't that the be-all and end-all as far as journalists are concerned? At least legitimate journalists.
Redacted.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
But the State Department's personnel who briefed the Select Committee in April 2015 did not play a role in the transfer of these files, therefore having deniability. Overall, this is just, another way that the Democratic frontrunner, presidential frontrunner Hillary Clinton, is getting away with breaking the law and being held accountable for her role in the Benghazi attacks on September 11th, 2012, as Ambassador Chris Stevens and three other Americans died. But in her words, what difference does it make? And we will not see any accountability or justice from any Benghazi-related investigation.
No. No, none at all.
That's final. Also,
Trey Gotti, the whole nine yard. I mean, the whole thing stinks. Benghazi is
it's like the 9/11 Commission with the 28 pages. You know, the 28 pages, it doesn't even matter if they're secret anymore. Yesterday, there were some interesting articles, and we're going to hit something on the Panama Papers, too, if I can get my browser unfrozen. But the 9/11 28 redacted pages that dealt with Saudi Arabia involvement, I mean, the news is picking up on this. It's reporting on it that there was Saudi involvement. There was money transfers from the internal government of Saudi Arabia directly to the alleged hijackers, and Saudi Arabia threatened to pull $750 billion worth of currency out of America. And, you know, that all while our renegade in chief is over there on a visit. I'm not sure what even you would call it. I read he was snubbed by the Saudi leaders while arriving. And they seem to be scared. And this brings up another issue. A lot of people think that it would be okay to... It's one thing to release the 9/11 papers for the family members. It's another thing to let the family members sue the Saudi Arabian government. A lot of people aren't going to like what I have to say about this. But if you allow the citizens of America to sue the government of Saudi Arabia...
Yes.
You're opening up the American government to be sued by any person in the world itself. Well, now, that might not be a bad thing.
Okay, but they do have laws right now prohibiting that, correct?
Right. And Obama, Paul Ryan, and Lindsey Graham are behind the push to veto this 9/11 bill, which would allow family members to sue Saudi Arabia. Now, should they be held accountable? Absolutely.
Right.
Should our government sanction them? Definitely. Should private citizens be able to sue foreign governments? I say no. And the reason I say no is because this is what the TPP does, only it does it through corporations. Even though corporations are recognized as individuals, this is what it's going to allow the TPP to do and allow corporations to do to other countries, including America, which will and can have the ability to completely destroy the and clog up the judicial system and the gut, you know, any worth our country has. Imagine if family members of Guantanamo Bay people who were tortured could come back and sue the United States.
Well,
I'm saying that policy
bad?
Specifically, I don't know if it's good or bad at this point. I'm just saying that if we allow the family members of to sue the Saudi Arabian government, we're opening ourselves up as a government to many, many lawsuits.
Well, okay, in my position on that,
and is
would
it
be,
bad? You know, I don't know. Maybe it's needed. Maybe, I mean, would it destroy the country? It could. You know, you're not talking about some run of the mill lawyers here. You're talking about the people who create law.
Right. I get that. And that's a very good observation. It's something that we really need to research and discuss. And you know, what did, for example, what did our forefathers say about this? Constitutionally speaking, what's the, or at least the legal aspect of things?
It'd
be very interesting. Before we get to the top of the hour, Joe, I just want to mention,
Iran launched a space rocket, and North Korea had a nuclear missile accident.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that later, because I mentioned something about an accident to you with North Korea
You did? Off air?
Yeah. We're not done with that yet. That story's still going to... You're going to be surprised.
And it's interesting what happens off air. We probably should, from now on, put stuff on there, especially that we talk about off air, because it's interesting how that did play out. Before we get to the top of the hour, I just want to mention, I'm getting some emails about the about our Hagman Report store. Folks, it is not open for business yet. It's up. It's live. It was my fault for putting it up live before it was ready to go. However,
it's coming along.
It's coming along. Please. Yes, it will be open. It will be ready to go. For example, we've got the Hagman t-shirts and such. I don't have any sizes on there. Don't have sizes. Yeah, please. Please be patient. I will make an announcement hopefully tomorrow. It'll be up and running. Just give me some time. It takes some time to build the store, put it in the code. So please, it's not open yet. Please, it's not open. But when it opens, we'll rock.
Stay with us on the other side. John Robertson, Hollywood Insider, will be with us next.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.